Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, March the 23rd, and welcome to our commentary again. Forgive my voice. I'm struggling, but I'm making a comeback, and I'm getting better, but I'm not quite there yet, so please apologize for my voice as I'm recovering a little bit here from whatever's out there. I've got it, so forgive me for that. I want to begin by just remembering today that Madeleine Albright, who was the first woman Secretary of State, passed away today. She was 84. She was Secretary of State under President Clinton, and very successful lady. And before that, I think she was a foreign policy consultant for various administrations. You know, very good lady. I think she was born, I believe she was born in Europe and came to the United States as a young woman after World War II or during World War II. I don't quite remember the story. But, you know, when I think of Madeleine Albright, when I think of her, and when I think of her career, there's one thing that stands out. For some reason, this is what always comes to me when I think of it. Back in 98, 99, when the Clinton administration was making the case against Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction, there was a big Nightline event, I remember, where Madeleine Albright and other people in the Clinton administration were taking questions from voters, like, I don't know what they call these things, forum or whatever they call it. And she was there explaining why weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were a threat to an American family in Iowa or Kansas or whatever. You may remember that at the time, the Clinton administration had just put into effect something about the Iraq Freedom Act. I think that's what it was called, or the Iraq Liberation Act, which in essence said the policy of the United States was to remove Saddam Hussein from power. Now, of course, everything changed, I know, after 9/11. But if you go back to 98, 99, it's so interesting how we were talking about weapons of mass destruction back then, way before 9/11. Of course, back in the late 90s, Saddam Hussein was living under the ceasefire that had ended the first Gulf War. And he was violating that ceasefire because he was shooting at the planes, enforcing the no-fly zone. Now, he never hit one of our planes, but nevertheless, there was a no-fly zone back then, and Saddam Hussein didn't like it. So he would shoot at the planes, and then the planes would shoot back down and destroy the missile or whatever it came from. But, you know, rest in peace, you know, Madeleine Albright, great career, wonderful lady. But that's what comes to my mind when I think of her, those early discussions in the late 1990s about Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction. Of course, everything changed, as you know, after 9/11, because after 9/11, we couldn't give Saddam Hussein the benefit of the doubt. It was simply beyond that. But anyway, Madeleine Albright, a very good lady, and rest in peace. And thank you for your service to the country as a diplomat and in so many other ways that she served the country. I want to begin talking today about an editorial in the Dallas Morning News today. And the editorial is basically saying that the Democrat Party has a problem with Hispanics. And the problem is that these progressive policies that the Democrat Party has been promoting, preaching, they're not working with Hispanics. I guess the Democrat Party is finding out that Hispanics are in favor, for example, of school choice, that Hispanics are in favor of let's say, order on the border, meaning they want to see the border respected, and they want to have a policy on the border that protects the border. They don't want to see their communities on the border turn into a chaotic situation like we're seeing now. And it's a fascinating article because as the Democrat Party turns more and more progressive, Hispanics are walking away. And that is, you know, when you think about it, that could be an earthquake, a political earthquake in November. I mean, remember that the so-called coalition that included Hispanics and blacks and liberal women and a small percentage of whites, that was the Obama coalition. That's what they put together in 2012 to win the presidency by a couple of points in the popular vote. And that was supposed to be the coalition. Well, that coalition is falling apart right now because Hispanics are walking away from the progressive policies. They simply do not want these policies. And speaking of progressive policies, let's talk about Judge Brown Jackson. Look, she's going to get in. I mean, at this point, I don't see how she doesn't get in. She's got 50 Democrats. You know, there is the possibility, I suppose, always that Joe Manchin of West Virginia says, no, I'm not going to support this. I think right now that's less than 50%. So she's going to get in. She's going to get in with 50 Democrats. I don't know how many Republicans are going to support her. But they don't need Republicans. If they can get all 50 Democrats, they take a vote, and then the vice president breaks the tie, and it's over. She's in the Supreme Court. At the same time, as I've said before in these podcasts, her presence in the Supreme Court doesn't change anything because right now there are 6 conservative judges in the Supreme Court. Some would argue 5, but Roberts, I know some of you don't like him, but Roberts on big things tends to support the conservatives. So I always count him as a conservative, but I know some of you don't like him. But you've got at least 5 that are reliably conservative. And now you're going to have 3 who are reliably liberal with this new judge. Roberts being, you know, somewhere in between, but most of the time with the conservatives. But the point is that this judge is not going to change anything. Judge Brown Jackson is not going to change anything in the Supreme Court. So what can I tell you other than she's going to get in, don't get frustrated, but it is I can understand the frustration when you watch the way she answers some questions. And this one about the definition of a woman, I mean, that is as bizarre an answer as I've ever heard. Somebody asked her for the definition of a woman. You know, I used to think that that was easy. And at one time, I think most people thought that was an easy definition. Woman is the female gender. Woman, men. Women have babies, they nurse babies, they are the wife, the mother. I mean, pretty easy definition. But now, of course, that's not so easy. And, you know, remember a minute ago I was talking about progressive policies and how those policies are killing the Democrat Party with Hispanics. Look, I've got to think most reasonable Americans yesterday listened to this lady say, I don't know what the definition of a woman is. Because I am not a biologist. I think most people had to see that and just say, my goodness, I mean, this is crazy. We are now into lunacy. This is no longer political ideology. This is now lunacy. That is what that is. But as I said before, she's going to get in. Don't get worked up. She's going to get in. But at the end of the day, she doesn't change anything. And she and Kagan and Sotomayor will continue to be the three liberal votes. And then the other six will be the conservative votes. And that's how the court will break down. But this makes it super important that we pick up the Senate back in November. Because I'm sure you've all heard about Justice Thomas being in the hospital. Now, I don't know all the details of it. From what I've heard, he's going to be in the hospital for a couple of days. He'll be going home. But, you know, when you're in your 80s and you go in the hospital, you know, people have a reason to worry. Again, I don't know how serious it is. But that's what I'm worried about. We cannot lose anybody on our side. We cannot change the composition of the Supreme Court. Again, Judge Brown Jackson doesn't change anything. She replaces a liberal, and there are still three liberals. But the other six, we have to make sure that, one, we keep the Senate, and number two, we win the presidency in 2024, because that's what happens. Whoever wins the presidency selects the candidate for the Supreme Court. So that's what we have to think about. But as I said, Judge Brown is going to get in, or Brown Jackson is going to get in. She's going to get in. If you don't think she's going to get in, tell me why, because I don't see any way. She's going to get 50 votes. I don't see how we keep her out of the Supreme Court, unless Joe Manchin decides to become a maverick. I wish he would, but I don't know if he will on something as important as the Supreme Court. I don't know. I just don't know if that's going to happen. There's an amazing story coming out of Ukraine. I have a post about this today at the American Thinker. You can see it in the same place you're watching this, where between Ukraine and Russia, they constitute for 1/3 of all the wheat consumed in the Middle East and Africa. So people are anticipating food shortages and the price of things going up because of these food shortages. And, you know, that could also have an impact on the political situation in many of those countries. Hunger is usually one of those things that can make people pretty angry. And, you know, you could have conflicts, you could have social upheaval because people are hungry. And with Russia and Ukraine, contributing 1/3 of all of the wheat in two of the world's biggest regions, Africa and the Middle East, that's something to worry about. That's something to really worry about, because they're not going to have an impact on the United States. We don't get our wheat from there, but other countries do. And they're going to go hungry in the next few months because they're not going to have any wheat coming from Russia or the Middle East. There's another very interesting story concerning Ukraine. I'm a little skeptical of the story, but it is fascinating. That the Russians have lost between 7,500 and 15,000 soldiers in Ukraine. Again, I don't know if it's true. It's so hard to verify these things. But if 7,500 is true, that is a major military problem. That's a major military problem. It doesn't mean that the Russians are going to lose, because they've got the ability to drop bombs and send the tanks in and so on. But man, the kinds of losses that people are talking about are pretty severe losses. Pretty severe losses. I mean, remember, we lost 4,500 troops in Iraq. And that was over an 8-year period. We lost about 4,000 troops in Afghanistan, and that was over a 20-year period. Here you're talking in less than a month, and they're talking about 7,500, 15,000 troops. Pretty incredible. That's all I can tell you. That is pretty incredible, pretty bad, if it's true, as we are hearing. On this day in history, I want to remember a couple of my favorite baseball players who were born on this day. Lee May, who was a wonderful player in the 1970s. He played with Cincinnati and then with Baltimore. He was a first baseman, a power hitter, one of those guys that you wanted to have on your team. And the other player, George Scott, who was born on this day in 1942, I believe. And George began with the Red Sox, and then he eventually moved to Milwaukee. Just another wonderful player. You know, in the 1970s, which is the decade, I guess, that I followed baseball with the most passion, there were so many great players. And George Scott and Lee May were a couple of those guys that we just used to love. Lee May passed away in 2017, and George Scott passed away, I think, in 2009. But just absolutely wonderful guys that you love to go see. And the kinds of guys who I think understood, what I liked about them is I think they knew how to respect the game. And that is such an important part of playing baseball. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And if today is your birthday, happy birthday and enjoy yourself. And once again, thank you for putting up with my voice, but I think I'm getting a lot better. I think I am. Wonderful day, everybody. Enjoy yourself, and we'll see you the next time.